All right, is the appellant ready to proceed?
May it please the court. My name is Nate Kellum, and I represent the appellant, Gabriel Olivier. Olivier comes to this court seeking access to the court so that he can challenge the unconstitutional restriction of a city ordinance applying to his protected speech in a public forum. The district court dismissed his claim for prospective relief on the basis of Heck versus Humphrey. It kept Olivier from being able to pursue any challenge to this ordinance at any point in the future. And it's just because he happened to be charged under the ordinance and paid a fine. The district court erred in this application of Heck because it applied Heck to in ways that were never intended, to circumstances that were never contemplated when the Supreme Court developed this doctrine, which predominantly deals with prisoners who are seeking relief. Either they're trying to overturn convictions, they're trying to limit the duration of their imprisonment through Section 1983 actions, not traditional civil rights claims like Olivier. It is very different. Olivier has no access to habeas corpus, and the Supreme Court has constantly said that's what Heck is about, is in the core of habeas corpus. He had no access to it at any point because he was never in custody. He never had any interest in limiting his imprisonment because he was never in prison. And also, he has never had any interest in challenging the underlying conviction. His claim for prospective relief is forward-looking. What he wants to do is he wants to go back. He wants to go back to Quarry Park and be able to express his beliefs, to be able to share his views with others without the impediment of the unconstitutional ordinance. And yet the application of Heck is keeping him from doing this.
If the statute is declared unconstitutional, doesn't it effectively, even if he's not directly seeking that relief, does it effectively undermine his conviction?
If
the ordinance is found to be unconstitutional?
The language from the Supreme Court in this court is that it would have to necessarily imply the invalidity of the conviction.
And that's not what we have here?
I don't believe so, because with Olivier, it would really require more of an affirmative step because he's not seeking to expunge his record. He's not seeking to do anything with the conviction. What he wants to do is he wants to go out there next week. He wants to be able to speak next week. So it really doesn't deal with the underlying facts. It wouldn't refute any of the underlying facts of the conviction. It wouldn't deal with the conviction itself. It really deals simply with an unconstitutional ordinance that continues to hang over his head. He wants to pursue relief that I do not believe is contemplated by the Supreme Court or this court in its rulings, because the relief is prospective in nature. The Supreme Court, in a couple of cases, in Edwards versus Balasag, a 1997 decision, in Wilkinson versus Dotson, a 2005 decision. In those cases, the court had prospective relief and did not apply Heck as a bar. And this court has followed this with one exception, and that was in a Clark versus Stadler decision. And I think what's unique about that case is that in Clark versus Stadler, in addition to prospective relief, there is also a claim for damages. And so what this court held was, is because the prospective relief was so intertwined with the claim for damages, it would essentially have the same effect. And so what's different about Olivier, he's not making a claim for damages. And so there is no residual effect from injunctive relief or prospective relief. And with that being the difference, heck, is just simply inapplicable here.
If we were to agree with you and hold that Heck versus Humphrey doesn't apply here, do we need to reconsider Clark in light of Dotson and Skinner?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so, because Clark is distinguishable. It's distinguishable in a couple of different ways. One is because it did involve this intertwinement between the claim for prospective relief and the claim for damages. That's missing here with Olivier. There is no claim for damages. Also, Clark had an opportunity for habeas corpus, which Olivier did not and does not.
And I guess I'm not understanding how, because Clark was a claim for damages, it's significantly different from what we have here, because it seems to me that in both Clark and in this case, if there's a determination that the ordinance is unconstitutional, then you have what I think Judge Douglas referred to as effective, it's effectively the same thing. You have a determination that this underlying ordinance is unconstitutional, and that's what Heck says you can't do, and that's what we explained in Clark even further, I think. You don't get to do that. And that's exactly what Olivier is asking in this case, isn't it?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so.
Well, he wants a declaration that the ordinance is unconstitutional.
That'd be part of the injunctive relief, no question.
And you're saying that doesn't have any effect at all, doesn't have any meaning with regard to his conviction?
I wouldn't say, but that's not the standard. Does it have any effect? The standard is, does it necessarily imply? And it really doesn't fall in that. And also, what
doesn't necessarily imply what?
That the invalidity of the conviction. That's what the language is from the Supreme Court and this court, actually, in Clark.
And so your contention is a declaration that the ordinance is unconstitutional doesn't call into question the validity of a conviction for violation of that ordinance.
I wouldn't say it doesn't call into question. What I'm saying is it doesn't necessarily imply. And the reason why that's important is because it would take an affirmative step on Olivier's point.
To stop him from taking that affirmative step at some time in the future.
He doesn't have any interest in doing that. That's not what he wants to pursue. He's not trying to do an end run in order to undermine the conviction, Your Honor. What he wants to do is he really wants this injunctive relief. He really wants to speak. That's what he's seeking. This court is really, this is a case of, I would say, a matter of first impression, in a sense of you have a combination of things that's different from Clark. You have a combination of a plaintiff who did not have an opportunity for a habeas corpus, none. He couldn't pursue that route. And yet he's seeking prospective relief. So he's really denied of any opportunity to challenge the law in federal court. And so this is mentioned in the Gabalaza versus City of Dallas. That's a case in the Northern District of Texas, Judge Godbee. He talked about how this court has yet to deal with that combination. And so didn't find any Fifth Circuit case dealing with it, looked at Supreme Court precedents, and also looked at a case in the Ninth Circuit, and that was Martin versus City of Boise, which dealt with a very similar situation. And in fact, all these are the three cases that line up, Gabalza, Martin, and Olivier, because these are cases that were the plaintiffs, in the same type of laws, where they're challenging. In Gabalza, it was a panhandling law. In Martin, it was a homeless individual challenging a camping law. And what you have there is you have, this doesn't involve a prisoner who's in custody. These are folks who are paying fines. And also they're seeking prospective relief because they want to be able to engage in this conduct in the future. And what Judge Godbee held in Gabalza was that Heck doesn't apply because of that. That's what the Ninth Circuit held in Martin, that Heck doesn't apply in these circumstances. And so with this matter of first impression before this court, I would submit that would be appropriate for this court to say that this isn't an overruling of Clark. Actually, it's really just an extension of this court in these circumstances where you have a plaintiff who does not have the capacity to seek a habeas corpus, and he's seeking prospective relief. In those circumstances, Heck does not apply. To hold otherwise would really lead to some perverse results, not just with Olivier, but any others, because someone's challenging a panhandling law. They're challenging a camping law like that in Martin, and they pay a fine. They can never challenge that law ever, no matter how much they want to conduct in that activity. That can't be. Supreme Court certainly has not, this court certainly has not indicated that Heck could possibly stretch that far. It would insulate unconstitutional laws from challenge. That would pervert the very idea of a 1983 claim. Simply cannot allow for that to happen. That would be, I believe, an outlier, I would suggest, Your Honors. When you take a look at like the body of law regarding abstention doctrines, preclusion doctrines in every other area, take a look at the Rooker-Feldman doctrine, take a look at Younger abstention, none of them apply to prospective relief. None of them. And the reason is because it doesn't deal with the underlying action. And it really has this balance where you have this comedy between respecting state court decisions, which certainly I believe this court should be able to do, respect the decisions of state criminal courts, but the balance of allowing plaintiffs who are aggrieved, who've had their rights violated, to be able to pursue and obtain relief in federal court, to allow them to have access to the court. That's truly what is at stake here. In achieving this balance, I would submit to the court that Judge Godbee in Gabalza, the Ninth Circuit in Martin, that they got it right. That's the correct balance here, is where you look at, okay, is it prospective relief? Also, did this person have the capacity to seek a habeas corpus? And if so, with the prospective relief, is it so intertwined with the claim for damages that it would effectively achieve the same result as the damages? And if it does not, and if you don't have a damages claim, just like you don't have here, then in those circumstances, Heck does not apply, and for good reason, because it would keep individuals, civil rights plaintiffs like Olivier, from being able to obtain relief that they very much deserve. That's, I believe, the extent of my comments at this time, but I'll be happy to answer any questions the court may have.
Thank you, counsel.
All right, thank you.
Butler.
Morning, Your Honors. Heck bars civil claims that would, quote, necessarily imply the invalidity of criminal convictions. That's the rule, regardless of whether a plaintiff seeks money damages, seeks declaratory relief, or seeks injunction. My friend on the other side presents it as if it's categorical, saying that it just doesn't apply to his client's request for an injunction, but that's just not how Heck works. Heck requires a context-specific determination to make that validity determination. We see that probably best from this court's excessive force cases. Sometimes Heck bars excessive force claims. Sometimes it doesn't. It depends on the claims brought, the relief sought, the factual theory pressed by the plaintiff. And that's really the essence of our forfeiture argument here, is that the plaintiff really didn't give the court enough information, at least in the opening brief, to be able to make that determination. Below, he brought both 14th Amendment and First Amendment claims. The claims don't even make an appearance in the opening brief, except in the statement of the case. There's no distinguishing in the opening brief between as-applied challenges, facial challenges. That's an important distinction. So that's the basis of our forfeiture argument. But once you get around to trying to clarify exactly what the plaintiff's position is, it runs headfirst into Clark versus Stalder. In that case, this court sitting en banc said that a First Amendment facial challenge to a rule is barred under Heck, and that's exactly what we have in this case. Now, what plaintiff tries to do on appeal is disclaim any claim for damages, but that's not what he argued, or that's not what is before the district court. If you look at his complaint, page 24 of the record, paragraph F, this is exactly what the complaint says. It says, one of the requests for relief is that this court award Olivier compensatory damages for injuries sustained and expenses incurred. So this trying to disclaim and draw a distinction between money damages and intertwined and all that, that's a new theory on appeal. That's an improper interpretation of Heck just as a matter of law, but it's also factually inaccurate. What the Supreme Court said in Wilkinson, now one thing he tried to do was draw this distinction between Rooker-Feldman and abstention and say, you know, well, none of these doctrines apply to injunctive relief. We know from Wilkinson that that Heck applies to injunctive relief because that's exactly what Wilkinson said. What Wilkinson said is that you have to look at whether or not the challenge is one of procedure or is it one of substance. And so in that case, for example, it was a parole hearing, and the court said, okay, if the plaintiff wins his 1983 suit, nothing changes about what happened in the past. All he does is get a new parole hearing with different procedures next time around because the procedures in the past would be declared unconstitutional. That's not what we have here. What he wants is a declaration that this ordinance for the city of Brandon is unconstitutional. And the result of that would be that he would have been convicted under an unconstitutional ordinance, and therefore his prior conviction would be invalid. So he's just not a proper plaintiff. He presents Heck as if it is a habeas rule. It is not. What Heck is all about is collateral attacks. You don't have to be in jail for a Heck bar to apply. What it's about is where's the proper venue to make your constitutional challenge. Mr. Olivier pled no contest in the municipal court. That generally, you know, means that you take it up to the circuit court. He could have challenged the constitutionality in the circuit court. He could have challenged constitutionality in the Mississippi Court of Appeals. He could have challenged constitutionality in the Mississippi Supreme Court, and he could have applied for cert to the United States Supreme Court on constitutional grounds. That's what Heck is about. It's about where do you have to make these challenges. And the fact of the matter is he's made himself no longer a proper plaintiff to make a facial constitutional challenge to this rule. We also, I think he says in the brief, he encourages the court not to create a circuit split based on that Martin case. With all due respect, the Ninth Circuit is who made the circuit split. This court's decision in Clark came in 1999, and the rationale from the dissenters in the Martin case was the same as the rationale from this court's en banc decision in Clark. It said that a facial challenge to this rule, if we declared it unconstitutional, it would mean, as a matter of substance, this individual would have been convicted under an unconstitutional rule. And that necessarily implies the invalidity of the conviction. So that is our argument under Heck. You know, I think both, what I would say, if the court has any problem with Judge Wingate's application of Heck, then both sides ask this court to reach the merits of this case. So we would encourage the court to do that if there's any problem. But again, I think it's on all fours with Clark. Our argument, just briefly on the merits, is that this is exactly the kind of reasonable time, place, and manner restriction that the Supreme Court has endorsed. I would, you know, we filed a 28J from a companion case that's pending before Judge Jordan and now on appeal before this court, and he certainly found the ordinance to be content neutral. And you know, that's what these First Amendment challenges are all about, is preventing viewpoint discrimination. And there's no viewpoint discrimination here. This is a rule by a city that is applies during a limited period of time for public safety, to protect, you know, people traveling on the road from both vehicular and pedestrian traffic. To protect the interests of these concert goers who pay good money to see these events, and we think it's constitutional. So unless the court has any questions, then the city will rest on its feet. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. Rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Dealing briefly with the damages, it is certainly true that Olivier brought damages initially, but filed a motion to amend to drop those damages claim, and made clear on this appeal that he's not pursuing damages any longer. His claim deals with prospective relief. And Your Honor, respectfully, this issue, it is an issue that was not addressed in Clark, is an issue, I would say, of first impression, and that is you have a plaintiff who did not have an opportunity for habeas corpus, who also is seeking prospective relief, and that is what was set out in the Martin case. So that's why Martin certainly did not create a circuit split.
So you're saying in the district court you withdrew the claim for damages?
I filed a motion to amend to drop that damages claim. I certainly did, Judge.
And the motion was granted?
Motion was not entertained.
So the claim is still alive?
I don't believe so. We've withdrew it. We're not pursuing it.
So, but for that motion, your case is just like Clark?
I'm not really sure of that, Judge. I think on appeal that you can, for the purposes of the appeal, we only pursue the prospective relief, so I wouldn't say that would be the case. Because I think we've made that clear that we're not pursuing retrospective relief, but prospective relief. This is what I think is the concern of the case. The city confirms this in their briefing. It says, okay, what does this leave for Olivier? What opportunity can he have to challenge an unconstitutional ordinance that continues to haunt him? How can he deal with it?
Your opposing counsel says he should have, instead of pleading guilty, he should have challenged it at that time.
That's right. He says that instead of just paying a fine, what I think typically most folks would do to challenge that. But at this point, what can he do? What are his options? And what Brandon says is, well, get arrested again. Go ahead and get arrested intentionally, and then you can challenge in state court. But what happens at the very best, in state criminal court, you could have a finding that the state court says, yeah, that's unconstitutional. He can never seek injunctive relief, ever, because he has no access to federal court. You know, there's no court in the country that has supported that position that the city is adopting here. Certainly not this court, and I suggest that in this case the court not do so. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the matters that are on today's docket for oral argument. So.